storage in dormant peach trees following variable fall climate by Brian Lawrence of Clemson University.
Thanks, everyone. We've seen several talks now that have talked about nutrient, and we've had a couple questions about movement of nutrients, especially in the fall regarding apples. We didn't talk about it with pawpaws, but we'll go to a more tastier fruit now with peach trees. No bias there, of course, by any means. I'm from Clemson University, and we'll jump right in. We are talking about perennials today, and we all know that perennial trees obviously live from year to year, so the nutrient requirements that are needed from one plant that you might, let's say you fertilize your peach tree in the springtime, the way your peach tree is going to behave that year is obviously determined by that. And like has been mentioned earlier in the session, peach trees, like lots of deciduous plants that are perennials, they don't want to lose those nutrients. Those nutrients are needed from year to year. So if the plant is able to resorb some of those nutrients from the leaves, especially during the autumn time before dormancy, that will impact the health of that plant during dormancy and in the subsequent years. There's been a lot of research that has looked at peach leaves and apple leaves as far as nutrient absorption throughout the years, but we don't know how this might change with variable climate. And that's what my study is sort of focusing on. So we're looking at between the autumn season and the winter, how does nutrient resorption and subsequent dormancy nutrients, how did those change in light of climate change or in, I should say, variable climate. So in South Carolina, the past 2 years, we've seen some inconsistent production due to variable climate. In 2015 and 2016, we had very low chill hours. There was warmer temperatures in the fall and also in the wintertime. And so that decreased the number of peaches that were produced. And that's because many of our cultivars need certain amount of chill hours in order to successfully produce fruit. Likewise, last year, you probably heard on the news, all of our peach crop was lost. Over 90% of it was lost, at least in South Carolina, because our peaches woke up too soon in the spring. We had very warm temperatures in the spring, and then we had a frost that occurred in March, and so we lost all of our peaches. So although those are sort of single events that could be deemed as variable climate factors, the variations in temperature and rainfall can determine the health of the perennial, especially in the wintertime. If you were a grower and you looked at this peach tree here, and it normally would have been defoliated at this time, you might make the assumption that photosynthesis might be still occurring, and that might affect the source and sink interactions of that plant to pull those nutrients back into the perennials. And another important note is because we're not dealing with annual crops, and peaches in general are usually only in production for 10 to 12, maybe 15 years if you're lucky. The first 3 years, you don't really get any fruit off of them. If there's an oscillation of El Niño or La Niña, and there's variations in climate, but you're making the assumption that nutrients are moving the way they normally do, during that decade, perhaps, of production, you could have multiple years of where you're assuming incorrectly, where the nutrients are moving differently. So my objective here is to understand the changes in nutrient movement as a result of delayed senescence. So if you have the warm temperatures in the fall, the leaves stay longer on the tree, and we don't know how resorption might change because of that. And we hypothesize that trees with a delay of senescence will have additional time to move those nutrients back to their reserves, and this will increase the quantity of nutrients within those reserve tissues. It's sort of difficult for us to study that within the field. So what we did is, this is not a field study. We brought trees into a greenhouse environment where we had higher temperatures so we could successfully delay senescence. And we were able to compare 2-year-old peach trees grown in pots in a greenhouse environment, which was warmer, versus an outside environment, which is actually that lower photo. Although it looks like it's a greenhouse, that's an open cage environment, so it's open to ambient temperatures. But there is a roof on top of it, and so we can control the soil moisture. And you can start to see some of us are building up of our factors here. We have greenhouse versus outside, our soil moisture, where we had 100% of the daily evapotranspirative needs of a plant applied, and then the other half of the tree we applied 50%. And then our final factor would be cultivar. We had Scarlet Prince, which is a mid-season cultivar, and we compared them to Autumn Prince trees, which are a late-season cultivar. They are 2-year-old trees, so they don't have fruit on them, but the genetic differences between a mid-season and a late-season might determine whether resorption efficiencies would be different. So this is this 2x2x2 factorial statistical plan, and you can see each one of our sort of main effects there, where we can compare the delayed senescence to outside, where we'd have normal senescence pattern occurring. We can compare the two soil moisture treatments, And then finally, our cultivar at the end. And that made up about 8 different treatments where we had 7 or 8 trees where we could analyze in 2017 and 4 in 2018. Here we wanted to look at the progression of nutrients moving from leaves into dormancy. So the first section we'll look at leaf nutrients over time in the fall. And then we'll move further in my results and we'll look at actual individual parts of the plant where we analyze the new shoots, what I deemed as the one-year-old shoots, the stem section, which is still part of the scion, the below the graft union, so now into the rootstock, the lignified roots, and further into the fibrous roots. So a lot of these graphs are very similar, where the x-axis is showing the date per time each fall season. And column one, so to speak, is 2016 and then 2017. The first two graphs atop are looking at delayed senescence versus normal senescence, and then the lower two are looking at the soil moisture. And the y-axis in this case is the percent of an element. In this case, it's nitrogen. In 2016, looking at leaf analysis, the delayed senescence trees under that warmer environment that kept the leaves longer, we saw that they had lower nitrogen as the fall season progressed. And you can see that that green line dips lower than the yellow dashed line above. Likewise, the following year when we repeated, we saw a similar trend where that green line was lower than the yellow line above it. And perhaps this might say that delayed senescence trees are resorbing more of that nitrogen maybe sooner or at a higher rate than the ones under normal senescence. In 2016, we did not see any differences in the soil moisture treatment, where the 100% evapotranspirative needs for the well-watered plants were equivalent to those that we only applied 50% of the water to. But in 2017, we did see differences where the well-watered trees, the blue line, had a lower overall amount of nitrogen in them across the dates in the fall. I forgot to mention, I'm only looking at nitrogen, potassium, and phosphorus, NPK, today. I also did calcium and magnesium, but I won't be showing those today. I was going to say that again. Moving on to phosphorus, the similar trend here in 2016 occurs with delayed senescence trees. So those warmer climate or warmer temperature in the fall somehow results in a lower nitrogen, lower phosphorus level in the trees compared to the normal senescence trees. And in 2017, we did not see that difference occur. But regarding soil moisture, in 2016, we saw a similar trend across the fall season. And in 2017, we saw a difference where the well-watered trees had a lower amount of phosphorus in the leaves over time, especially towards the very end of the fall. And these differences between the 2 years are most likely due to we had an outbreak of spider mites the second year on some of my trees. And that can very much influence the photosynthetic capability of the plant and also perhaps the resorption of nutrients. But we can talk about that a little more later. Regarding potassium, this is the exact opposite. So if you looked at so far the results from nitrogen and phosphorus, we saw that the delayed senescence trees had lower amounts of those elements. In the case of potassium, we see the opposite. So those normal senescence trees under ambient temperatures in the fall had lower potassium overall in the fall. And in 2016 and in 2017. If you were to draw a line across those graphs at the top, the 2016 graph with where it says delayed senescence and normal senescence, that's roughly flat for each one of those treatments. In 2017, you see that sloping curve that goes down. That's what we would expect. We actually saw that earlier in a talk where potassium should be decreasing through the fall. And the reason why we have these two different directions of trend is perhaps due to the source-sink interactions of plants, where maybe in 2016, the potassium levels of within the roots were already sufficient and the resorption pattern would have been different, because the strength of the sink would have been not as strong as in 2017 when potassium was needed within the reserves. In 2016 and 2017, when looking at soil moisture in the lower two graphs there, we again see that 100% evaporate. When we apply enough water daily for the plants, where they're well watered, we see that they have a lower amount of potassium within those leaves. So what are the implications of this? I've talked here, and we can see that we have different trends occurring within these elements based upon our effects. But where are these nutrients going? Are we assuming that these are being resorbed back to the dormant tissues, or what is occurring? Well, we have to look at those parts of the plant in order to understand. Before I get there, I have to talk about cultivar differences because we looked at our two main effects as far as delayed senescence versus normal senescence and soil moisture. But regarding cultivar, we do see some differences between the two cultivars that we had. Now, these are young trees. They don't have fruit on them. But even in the fall, we saw there was differences in the amount of potassium in the case of this element, potassium, between Autumn Prince and Scarlet Prince. So Scarlet Prince, both years, had significantly lower amounts of potassium across the fall season dates that we sampled. And this is perhaps due just to genetic differences in the sign alone in terms of resorption efficiency. All right, so now we're going to move into looking at those parts of the plant. There's two tables here per graph, and each one will be the year. So the top table shows 2017, and the bottom table shows 2018. And the farthest left column is the type of vegetation. So you can see we sort of have the above ground portion and then the below ground portion for new shoots, one-year-old shoots, the stem below graft, the root, and then the fibrous roots. In this case, when we look at our effect of senescence, we can compare delayed senescence versus normal senescence. And in this case, the percent of nitrogen. Within our delayed senescence trees, we have much, much higher nitrogen that's accumulating within the reserves following delayed senescence in comparison to trees that were under a normal senescence pattern. But in 2018, we didn't see this. In fact, an opposite trend occurred for one of our points, but across all of those tissue locations, they're statistically the same. And we could perhaps blame this again on maybe an end on a pest where the spider mites might have interfered with resorption of nitrogen in the fall. Regarding potassium, now, if you remember back to potassium, potassium is one that actually had much lower in the normal senescence leaves. So we could make maybe the assumption that normal senescence are accumulating or are resorbing, or I should say mobilizing more of that potassium back into the reserves. But we don't see that. We actually see that trees that have a delay of senescence again have higher quantities of potassium within their reserves. And we saw that in 2017 and in 2018 across all of these tissue types. If we move on to soil moisture, the percent of nitrogen in this case was much higher in the trees that were not well watered. So if you were a farmer and you perhaps had a drought in the fall, you could maybe assume that more nitrogen would accumulate in your reserves, perhaps, if your trees were not well watered during that fall season. The second year, we saw again an increase within the trees that were not well watered, but it was not statistically significant across all of the reserves. Regarding phosphorus, here again, we see that trees that were not well watered have higher amounts within their reserve tissues. And both years, we saw this significantly so across all of the reserve points. It's worth mentioning that the new shoots and one-year-old shoots for both years are significant, very much so, for both of these, for both of the years in terms of phosphorus. And it's important to realize that growers are removing a lot of this vegetation in annual pruning events. So with peaches, we prune twice a year, and one of them occurs in dormancy. So if you remove your new shoots and one-year-old shoots and are making assumptions of remobilization and the total quantity of elements of a certain element within your reserve tissue, and you remove those each year, and a variable climate event perhaps removed more, you could be assuming wrong in terms of your fertilization regimen, for example. And there were also cultivar differences in the perennial reserves, although they're not consistent between 2 years, and I just show you two examples of one, potassium and phosphorus, one on top of another. In both cases, Autumn Prince was significantly higher than Scarlet Prince across all the reserves in 2017 for potassium and for phosphorus in 2018. So we're seeing these differences in reserves, and we're seeing the differences sort of between how we could perhaps correlate leaf nutrient analysis in the fall with dormant nutrient analysis. And perhaps you need both of those to understand the health of your trees season to season, especially when a variable event in the fall, like higher temperatures or a drought might occur, for example. We see that delayed senescence can increase the resorption, perhaps, of nitrogen and phosphorus. In our study, we didn't see that with potassium. Lower soil moisture could increase the reserve nutrients within peach trees. And surprisingly, different cultivars have different resorption efficiencies. So if you're a grower, remember back to that original photo that was a yellowing tree in the fall. You've progressed into winter now, you're beginning into spring, and one row of these trees might be a different cultivar than the other. If you are making assumptions that all cultivars resorb nutrients in a similar efficiency and perhaps have similar patterns of reserves, then when you prune in the spring, you might have pulled much more from one row than another, and that could have implications for future management and for sustainability. The goal here, of course, is to find ways to optimize fertility practices within orchards. And the goal, I think, what I've been thinking about within this whole session is that many crops we need to optimize fertilization programs for and understand whether we defoliate apples, how is that going to change the later fertilization regimens, or how is it going to affect growers so that we can build sort of a climate smart way to grow things in the future. So there's many people to thank, my committee, my advisor who is with me every step of the way, my masters, my committee, the Melgar Lab, who are around, come find us. Thanks, you guys. Any questions?
Any questions for Brian? Go ahead.
I did. So I would. This is just sort of a portion of what I've looked at through my master's. We also looked at even carbon assimilation patterns in the fall, but there were very big differences in flower formation following spring. So those that had what I deemed a delay of senescence, the warmer temperatures in the fall, those had much lower numbers of flowers in the following spring. So in my understanding of that is that we've just reduced the number of chill hours required for those particular cultivars. It might have been different for different cultivars, but for the two that we had, much lower numbers if you had a warmer fall.
You mentioned that these are the greenhouse trees, right? Yeah.